from the WGTD Arts and Other Events calendar. Gateway's Summer Youth Camps will host All About Face on June 17th and 18th at the Kenosha campus. The hands-on camp will teach the basics of makeup artistry and skincare. Go to gtc.edu.
Support comes from Kenosha Harbor Market, featuring the market's numerous vendors that offer breads and other baked goods, including Fraternity Notre Dame, Apple Holler, Pastry for You, and European Cookies. The market is open Saturdays from 9 until 2 on 2nd Avenue in Plaza Douay. This is WGTD-FM. You're listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to a discussion of local educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by Dwayne Olson, a retired member of the teacher education faculty at UW-Parkside, Karen Sconsert, an associate professor of education at Carthage College, Jess Sheeler, an outreach and career transition specialist at Job Corps, Steve Brown, assistant professor of education leadership at UW-Oshkosh, and former Kenosha Unified School Superintendent Joe Mangi. Now, here's today's Education Matters moderator.
Hello, I'm Karen Sconsert, and this is Education Matters. This is the season of graduations, also known as commencement. Commencement literally means a beginning or a start, and for many families, this means sending a family pioneer, the first person in the entire family, off to college for the first time in the fall. First-generation college students face special challenges as they navigate college without the benefit of guidance from family members who attended before them. So here with us today to talk about students who are the first in their families to attend college and supports that are offered to them are Anna Thompson, who graduated from UW-Eau Claire with a BA in psychology and a minor in family studies and a master's degree in student affairs administration from UW-La Crosse. Anna has worked as an academic advisor for almost 6 years, the last 2.5 at Carthage College. During that time, Anna's focused on advising undeclared students and supporting students from underrepresented backgrounds. And she coordinates the First in the Family pre-orientation program for first-generation college students at Carthage College. Welcome, Anna.
Thank you.
Maham Ali graduated from Carthage College with a degree in international political economy, and on air date, it'll have been about, 13 days, right? she graduated with a international political economy and a French minor. Maham founded 1G, or the First Generation Organization, in 2018 to assist first-generation college students in their journey. Maham has worked on several projects at Carthage College to support diversity, equity, and inclusion services. Welcome.
Thank you so much.
And Carrie Espinosa is the director of the Center for Student Success at Carthage. She holds a bachelor's degree in English literature from Marquette University and a master's degree in higher education from Carthage. Prior to coming to Carthage, she worked in not-for-profit college access and success programming in the city of Milwaukee with first-generation low-income students in the public school system. Carrie was the founding advisor for Carthage's 1G student organization. Hi, Carrie.
Hi. Thanks for having us.
And I just want to say, in the interest of full disclosure, I am a professor at Carthage College myself. So these are my colleagues, and Maham was a student not of mine, but at Carthage. And I have participated on the August faculty panel of the First in the Family professors for the last 2 years. So there actually are a lot of professors at Carthage who are also first-generation college students themselves, and they went on way past college. Did we have a count? How many of them are there? There were a lot that raised their hands when you asked.
Definitely over, 30. Yeah. I haven't got an official count, but I don't know if either of you two may have an official count.
I was going to guess something between 20 and 25%, which is probably really high, actually, for a faculty, but someday I'll find out more about that. So first question for Maham is, how do you define first-generation college student, and how do they differ from just any old college student?
Great question. So a first-generation college student is someone whose parents or legal guardians have not attained a bachelor's degree or higher, and they're the first in the family to do so. And so this is different from just any ordinary college student who may have had a family member who's gone to college. Those students who have had family members go to college sort of have a leg up in the college process in terms of sort of timelines and figuring out, where they need to be in the college process compared to students who have not had anyone in their family who's been through that process. You know, they may struggle with things like financial aid, scholarships, admissions processes, setting up tuition payments and things like that. And so obviously having someone who's been through the process makes it a lot easier to be able to sort of like have that ready in your mind to go compared to a student who's not had that exposure.
Mm-hmm. So what moved you personally to start this program?
Great question. So I'm a first generation college student. And so, like I said, you know, I'll be the first at this point, I'm the first one in my family to get a bachelor's degree. And so when I transferred to Carthage College, I was really looking for a place here where I could find students who had sort of the same experience and background as me, sort of navigating college. Although I transferred in as a junior, I still was struggling with, you know, like simple things like figuring out where I should be going for career services or tutoring services, how to set up payment plans and things like that. And so, you know, that sort of journey has always stuck with me throughout my college career. And I knew that there were other students on campus who are also maybe looking for that same community. And while the organization isn't really for as much as it is for, like, you know, the requirements of college, it's more of a community where other students who have sort of similar backgrounds and have sort of the same experience can sort of create something there and sort of have a home there.
Okay, thanks. So, Anna, what special services or programs have you developed for new students who are also first-generation students?
Yeah, absolutely. So, Maham has done such an awesome job with getting 1G off the ground, which has been a great connecting point.
And 1G is what you call the organization?
Yes, 1G, okay. The name of the student org that Maham started. I personally work with coordinating the first in the family pre-orientation. So that helps students right as they're first getting to campus, which you've participated mm-hmm. in, Karen.
Right.
But it's the third year of the program now. The first year we took anyone who wanted to do it, who was, you know, kind of marked as first gen from their FAFSA. They marked mm-hmm. that neither of their parents had bachelor's degrees.
And the FAFSA is the form they fill out for financial aid.
Yes, okay, exactly. So, yep. Okay. So we just recruited all of those students, and we had about 44 students sign up, and I think in the end about 40 participate. And it just brought students to campus a couple days early before new student orientation so that they could learn some of those things before they even get to orientation, so they kind of get back up onto level ground in some sense with the students who are coming in with some of that knowledge already. And that is sort of the takeoff point. And then throughout the year, we tried to do a couple community gatherings of those students so that they, you know, still know they have folks around. They're connected with me and Roger Moriano, who is also at Carthage and helping with First in the Family. And then this year, in our third year, we're going to have about 60 students participate. Mm-hmm. And last year, there was about a 20-person wait list. So at this, we wish we could accommodate every single first-gen student that comes and wants to participate. And at this time, we just don't have the capacity. So hopefully mm-hmm. in the future, we will. But from coming to campus, the main things that I'm hoping they get out of it is just that community building piece that Maham was talking about. We have 19 returning students who participated in First in the Family coming back as mentors to mm-hmm. work with the new freshmen, which I think will add a really big piece to that. This is our second year with mentors. And then just the information. So community and information. So you start getting those college lingo and concepts that you just may have never heard before because you didn't have that connection. So starting there and then trying to weave in some programming throughout the year and making a really intentional connection to 1G so that they're meeting other first-gen students that may not have been able to get into the program or maybe didn't even know about it still, mm-hmm. And they're continuing to build that kind of connection and community with other students.
So if you're doing 60 students, that's about 10% of the freshmen, maybe a little less?
A little less,
but
yep.
there are a lot more than that.
There are.
Right? So what is our percentage of first-generation students?
Good question.
It's a little over 30%, I believe, of the incoming yeah. student body, at least for the last few years.
Mm-hmm. And that's what that's have no parent or guardian that's attained a bachelor's degree. So
Correct.
And then in addition to that 30%, there'll be probably a lot who have one parent who's attained a bachelor's degree, but not the other or mm-hmm. one or a guardian. Okay, thanks, Anna. So, Carrie, how are challenges for first-generation college students different from just regular new students? So, Maham said some of that, but what are some other things that you've noticed?
Yeah, it's not only things that I've noticed at Carthage, but that are statistically significant across the United States. So Carthage is not alone with seeing an increase in a variety of students pursuing higher education that universities and colleges didn't see as frequently before. So some things that we know about first-generation students are that they are more likely to select a two-year institution than a four-year institution. More likely to enroll in for-profit institutions than their peers. They're more likely to attend part-time. So by the time a student comes to Carthage full-time, we know that those first-generation students are a group that are striving for more. They're willing mm-hmm. to step outside of their comfort zone and demand the type of education that their peers have, their other college-going peers. So that's an interesting thing to think about for Carthage, what that means for that student body. But the reality is that getting admitted is only the first step, right? Mm-hmm. And showing up on the first day is only that second step. Beyond that, we know that those first-generation students are much likely to have lower median family income. So this is a statistic from the National Center for Education Stats. That the median family income for first-generation freshmen at two- and four-year institutions has been around $37,000, while compared to almost $100,000 for their non-first-generation peers. That's mm-hmm. a huge difference. Right. So we know that the finances are a big component, and then we also know that the academic preparation is a challenge. So among first-generation students, there are lower rates of college readiness in key academic areas compared to their non-first-gen peers.
Right. I mean, I'm just thinking of this. So for listeners, I'm a professor of education. I work primarily with students who are planning to teach secondary students, so they're middle and high school teachers. And we talk a lot about AP access, advanced placement access. And I would say, in Kenosha, actually, they're pretty good about making AP courses accessible to lots of students regardless of their income level. But that is not true in every school district, right? And so if AP is one indicator of being prepared for college-level courses, at least having been exposed to college-level material in high school, and you didn't have the opportunity to take an AP class, or you didn't do it because you didn't have the money for the test, then you may be less prepared than your peers. Mm-hmm. Or there may just be that you're in a school system that just doesn't offer a whole mm-hmm. lot of AP right. courses. Yep. So, you know, like even though Kenosha has a fairly high percentage of low-income students, it also offers a huge array of AP courses and financial aid for taking the tests. So I think that's maybe not true everywhere. What was your experience with that, Maham? Did you take any AP classes in high school?
I actually took International Baccalaureate courses, so IB courses. Right. And I was fortunate enough to attend a school where that was just paid for.
Was that a public school?
It was a public school, yeah. Amundsen High School.
Oh, right.
So that was, you're able to take AP or mm-hmm. IB tracks, or now they have sort of like more advanced like computer science mm-hmm. tracks and things like that. But when I was there, those were available without charge, and you know, you just had to mm-hmm. stick through it and finish it. And so I was fortunate enough to be part of that track, and I graduated mm-hmm. doing that, and so did some of my peers.
But a lot of people don't have those opportunities.
No, absolutely
right?
not.
So what are some other indicators of college readiness that you've seen, Carrie? Since you're a first-year advisor, you kind of see where students might falter in their first year. What are some of those areas when that happens?
Yeah, I think, and Anna can maybe support me on this right. one, but I think we see a lot of students who come in from the beginning with very like stereotypical ideas of what they want to study. So mm-hmm. they want to become doctors, they want to become lawyers, they want to become teachers, things that they have seen regularly or seen on TV even potentially, right? So they don't necessarily know about some of the other programs of study, the other career paths that they maybe haven't considered just because of lack of exposure or lack of anyone pointing it out to them, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that's probably a big transition for that very first semester and first year is thinking about trying out some classes, but then maybe realizing that, oh, this isn't really what I thought it was, or, oh, I heard about this new thing that I've never even thought of before, and now I want to switch.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. I think a big part of the readiness piece, too, is what brought us to want to do this College Lingo and Concepts session in First in the Family, to really just understand the language, the culture, the social capital that might not be there from having parents who can tell you these things. For example, I had a student that I worked with this year who was supposed to participate in First in the Family and ended up having to not at the last minute due to work conflicts, which is pretty typical, I think, of maybe a first-gen mm-hmm. student having to work, right? But he attended a chemistry class for almost the first 3-4 weeks of the term and didn't know he had to go to the lab. He just had no idea there was a lab piece to it because he didn't understand how to read that on his schedule. So we had to kind of work through that process and had really supportive chem faculty that helped me help him through that experience. But those are just some little things that you may not never think about. And I think a piece of that too was not knowing that R meant Thursday on your schedule. Mm-hmm. So like, I think there's a lot of students that just need some more explanation about those things. So I think even those small things can have a huge impact on just a student's experience and, you know, their success in just the first few weeks.
Okay. I just want to remind you that you're listening to WGTD HDFM. I'm your host, Karen Sconzert, and this is Education Matters. This discussion of Carthage College's first-generation college student program and first-generation college students in general is archived at WGTD.org on the Education Matters page. You are invited to listen again, or you can find our WGTD Education Matters Facebook page and join in a discussion there. So, all of us here at the table, including me, are first-generation college students. So I wonder if each of you, and I'll take a little chance at this too, could you each describe an experience of confusion or challenge that you now know is probably connected to your first-generation status? You just mentioned one about the student who didn't realize that his chemistry class had a lab attached to
right.
it. So anyway, let's start with Maham. What, do you remember something that happened that you can now look back, say, oh, that was probably a first-generation thing?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think one thing that I sort of wish I had done better when I had started school was, like, reaching out to my advisors. And so I didn't know that I was getting an advisor to help me sort of get set up for my first couple of orientation days. Mm-hmm. And so I like completely ignored those emails and didn't look at any of that. And then was struggling at the last minute to, like, you know, find classes and things like that. So it was like, it's like small things like that that you're like not thinking about. You're like, oh, do I even get an advisor? I just thought I was going to be thrown in there and just sort of have to figure it out as I go along. But in fact, that there's someone there to actually help you through the process.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Carrie, how about you? Do you remember something?
Yeah, a few things came to mind, but I think one that really stood out to me was the understanding of the importance of internships and experiential learning opportunities and all of those career preparatory type things. I think often as first-generation students, we think, if I can only get to the finish line, right, in high school, if I can only get admitted and show up, right, in college, if I can only get to graduation day. And so thinking about what comes after graduation day often doesn't come until graduation day. And the understanding of how an unpaid internship could potentially pay off, that was pretty foreign to me because I was working my way through college, right? So the idea of doing work and not getting paid, well, how am I going to pay my rent? How am I going to stay in school and pay tuition? So I think that if maybe I were to go back now, I would see those things differently. I would see it as an investment over time, something that pays off over time.
Right. Anna?
Yeah, there were a couple things that came to mind. And I honestly, until I got to grad school, I didn't even know what first generation was. Mm-hmm. I mean, I went through my entire undergrad without even understanding that that was an identity that I had. But one big thing was that I thought my Pell Grant was for my grades. So I thought I was doing very well academically instead of for, you know, Pell Grant is for low-income students who need more financial assistance. Didn't know that. Mm-hmm. So in the end, it was all fine because I got the grant anyway, you know. But so that was something thinking back. I was like, oh, yeah, you just didn't understand that what that meant. Mm-hmm. And then another big thing was I qualified for work study. And my mom, who did not go to a four-year school, didn't know the process of how do you get a job on campus, and neither did I. So I think that was to my benefit because my brother played football at UW-Eau Claire, and she just told me to go right into their football offices and ask for a job from the coaches because they'll know you because your brother is on the team. So that's what I did, and I worked there for 3 years.
Oh.
So it paid off, but, you know, there's a process for those things that we didn't understand, so you just went with it.
That's a great story. I have a work-study story, too. So I, in part, chose the college that I attended because I worked at a fabric store in high school, and they had a branch of that fabric store within walking distance of the campus. And so I was like, oh, okay, I can just work there. And I did for the whole first term. And then in January, walking down College Avenue in Appleton, Wisconsin, in zero-degree weather is like a wind tunnel. And it really was not – I literally was worried I was going to freeze. It was very, 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 very cold. For a mile in sub-zero, wind chill is really bad. But I had work study on campus. I just didn't know what that meant. And so I finally had to quit. And I don't know who I talked to, but they said, oh, you could get a job on campus. And I ended up working in the library, which was a really great place for me because, you know, it was first of all not a wind tunnel, and second, you know, then I would be right there in that sort of good atmosphere, and I learned a lot about a lot of things academically because I was working on campus, so right. That made a big difference. So those are some interesting ideas. So there's another thing I think that happens a lot for first generation students, and that is once they start college, they're sort of torn between these two worlds, like, you know, the college world and the home world. And when you go home, no one really understands you. And when you're at school, no one really understands you. So do you have any experiences with those kinds of situations that any of you can share?
I think sort of related to the internship piece and the not paid internship piece. I remember when school was done, and this was probably for like the first 2 years of my undergrad, where my parents, and these are parents who work from sunrise to sundown, who are like, why are you, you know, working during your break? Why don't you just relax and, you know, stay at home, hang out with your family? But I was more interested in, you know, going to the job in downtown or whatever that I had, or like volunteering and, you know, beefing up my resume in that respect. And that was sort of challenging to sort of have that conversation with them and be like, this is stuff that I have to do to make sure that I have a leg up when it comes time to graduate and when I'm actually looking for a job once I'm done here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you have any thoughts on that, Anna?
Yeah, I think it's still something that I deal with as someone who decided to go work in education, mm-hmm. With just sort of not understanding what the world is like or what your job is like. And I worked a little bit at UW-Madison before I came here, and the only way my dad could get his head around it was continuing to ask me if I advised the athletes. And I was like, I do not. Like, no, I don't. I work with the students who do this and this and this, but just really just sort of learning to, you know, tell them a little bit about what I do and what my experience is like, you know, still being in the world of education, so that they can just kind of nod and smile and, you know, pretend that they understand what I'm talking about. So I think it just continues today, knowing that they, you know, support me and love me, but they can't quite understand what it's like to be there every day.
Mm-hmm. Carrie?
Yeah, I think it continues to be an adjustment as you move into your professional life too, right? So Maham, you're going to go on and have these big full-time awesome roles and do amazing things, but there are still going to be times, you know, in your work life where you're going to be noticing that you do some things differently and perhaps you're perceived differently, and that's part of that journey.
Right. So are there any supports that you offer to parents or other family members of first-generation students? Because right now I assume that there are some parents or grandparents of an incoming first-gen student. They're so proud because their just recent high school graduate is going off to college somewhere, but maybe they don't really have any idea how to be supportive. What advice would you give?
I can just talk a little bit about what we do for First in the Family, and then I think Carrie might have some thoughts on sort of all first-gen student parents. But for First in the Family, we do have a session, as we just call it, like our welcome to start off the whole program, that parents and guests and whoever are welcome to come to. And we just spend that first part of the kind of kickoff of the program introducing ourselves, talking about the program, explaining what the purpose is, and talking a little bit about what it's like for first-gen students at Carthage. And a big part of that is having our mentors introduce themselves and talk a little bit about, you know, what Carthage has been like for them and why they're excited about this program. Because I can imagine that one of the biggest things for a parent would just, you know, wanting to know that their child is going to be in good hands and is going to, you know, have a good time and can feel comfortable leaving them there for the first time. So we have that session. We started that after our first year, after student feedback, and it went really well last year, and I'm excited to do it again this year. And then we hope, this is just sort of the beginning and end pieces, but we're hoping when our first cohort of First in the Family students graduate next year, or in 2 years, I guess, so May 2021 will be our first graduates from First in the Family, to have like a celebratory dinner and welcome back their parents and family to really just celebrate their success, that they're, you know, we started here and First in the Family and now you're graduating, and, you know, we're just so proud and we want to share that with them. So May 2021, we're hoping that'll happen.
Oh, great. Carrie, do you have some ideas?
Yeah, I think being a small private liberal arts college, we have some luxuries that we can afford. So students, if there are parents or guardians that are trying to look in on them, check how they're doing, there are some things that we can do fairly easily. So there are bits of information online, but sometimes it's better to talk to someone over the phone. So parents or guardians can call and ask general questions, right, about the resources that a college offers. So if I think, you know, my son or daughter is struggling in biology, how might I help them get a tutor? How might I help them go to the writing center or do some of these things? So that's all public information that we can share, and we're pretty easy in terms of navigating. So when we do introductions to other folks around campus, we give names, we give phone numbers, right? So we're able to do those referrals pretty easily. When it gets into more personal academic records for the students, that information is protected by a federal law called FERPA. So that does make it kind of challenging if they think they have a child who might be struggling either academically or socially. But we do encourage our students to keep an open dialogue going with their parents and guardians, telling them, you know, what are you working on? What are you getting involved in? What has been more challenging than you expected? Because that's how that information gets out. When the door the door to communicating shuts, that's when it gets more challenging for the student.
Mm-hmm. So. Mom, do you have any advice in hindsight to any students following you, what their parents might be able to do to help them?
Yeah, I think Carrie sort of hinted at that really well, that just having an open dialogue with your parents, but also other family members. So I have two younger siblings. I have a younger brother and a younger sister, and my younger brother is getting ready to graduate high school. And so I've sort of have taken the place of guiding him through the college process and being there for him and helping him understand, like, this is what you need to be doing at this point in time. And so having that open dialogue and having that sort of person there to just be present, I think makes a big impact.
Mm-hmm. Great. So what are some advantages? One of the things this does, having this program, is hopefully will help more of these students succeed and finish college, right? Why is it in Carthage's interest to have a diverse student body, including a lot of first-generation college students? What does this do in the classroom? I mean, I could speak from my perspective, but I'm wondering what you all think of this idea.
Yeah, well, for the first, just sort of the kind of stats a little bit, we were really excited to see that our First in the Family students were retaining 10% higher than first-gen students that did not participate in the program. Uh-huh. So we know that there's been a measurable impact, even though the numbers were small in the first round, it's growing. So we're super excited to see that, you know, it's working at least a little bit. And I think that's so important because first-gen students with all of the challenges that we've discussed bring so much to the community, to their classrooms, their perspectives. are just so different than any other person. And from first-gen student to first-gen student, the experiences are different. So no single person's story is the same. And being able to have those different stories at Carthage, and this is true of any, you know, diverse student with any identity, that just brings, you know, that richness to a community where it's just not the same, oh, I have this and this and this and I did it. And it's like, well, great. But also I had this struggle and I bring this really awesome thing and I did it too. Mm-hmm. So it just really shows that Carthage can be a place for anyone to succeed and that the support is there for them to do that.
Mm-hmm. Do you have anything that you wanted to add?
Yeah, I would just add that having a diverse student body reflects the greater diversity of the world around us, right? And so this, for some students going into college, might be the first time that they're encountering that level of diversity that they're going to encounter once they graduate and they enter the workforce. And so this is almost like a microcosm where students are able to kind of test the waters a little bit and learn something new and talk to someone that they've maybe never spoken to before, right? Mm-hmm. Learn some things that add a different perspective to what they've been taught their whole lives. Mm-hmm. So having that type of richness gets them more prepared for the environment they're going to get in the world of work, where they're expected to interact with different folks and maybe do some traveling and things like that, right? So they're more prepared.
I would have to say, as somebody who works with future high school teachers, that it is really important that we have a lot of different voices in those classrooms, because the students that my students will teach are very diverse. I mean, just looking around in our three counties that we represent here through the radio station, there's a lot of different kinds of people that live in our tri-county area. And in the schools where my students are going to be future teachers, they really need to know how to work with a lot of different people. So it's important to have that diversity in the classroom before they go. So, Carrie, one question I always get when talking about Carthage in general, just about anything, is that the perceived cost, sort of the sticker price, seems unreachable for a lot of people, especially when you're talking about the income levels that you mentioned at the very top of the program, that the typical first-gen student is half the income of a non-first-gen student in their family. So how do you address that with first-generation students and families? Does this support begin at the admissions level to help students understand their options in paying for college? Or how does that work for people who maybe think a Carthage or any college education is out of reach?
Yeah, I would argue it actually even starts before admission. So at the high school level, students should be learning about the FAFSA and the different types of financial aid that are available. And they should be starting to apply for scholarships early on in high school, not senior year even, but earlier. And so the more prepared in high school that they are, the more prepared they are to get the notice from admissions that that aid package is ready for them and to be able to read it appropriately, to be able to interpret line by line what those things are, what is work study, what is a Pell Grant, and to be able to use that to make a decision. I don't think that the sticker price should scare people, right? A sticker price only means so much. Mm-hmm. It also depends on that aid package that they get and what other scholarships they've earned outside of that institution that they can apply to any institution of higher ed that they choose to go to. Mm-hmm. So I think that part is crucial, but it's never too late either. So if a student has not done that freshman, sophomore, junior year of high school, it's not too late. But it does take asking for help and putting yourself out there and saying, you know, I don't totally understand what this means. Can someone help me interpret this so that they can make the best financial decision that they can?
Mm-hmm. Do you have any other thoughts on that, either Maham or Anna?
I would just second what Carrie said. I think there are a lot of options scholarship-wise to look into. And even when students are at Carthage, I mean, there's postings that I see come through almost every week for another 10 to 12 scholarships that students could take advantage of. And I think sometimes it's just, especially for first-gen students, knowing that they should be looking at that consistently throughout the year, that there are scholarships all the time, not just like, oh, should I be looking for next year when, you know, spring semester comes around? It's like you can look all year long and then kind of coaching that. While it may take you a lot of time to write another scholarship essay and another scholarship essay, like, think about it as work, right? Like, if you're going to put in 2 hours writing three scholarship essays and they all pay off, maybe that's $2,000. Like, who knows? So I think sort of reframing that and really just making it sort of the norm, like, you know, what scholarships have you looked at today and have you applied to any recently, and then showing them where to find them if they haven't looked yet.
Mm-hmm. Right. And Maham, you started out in a community college,
yes,
right? Where did you go first?
I actually started off, I've actually jumped around a little bit, but I actually completed my 2 years at College of Lake County in Grays Lake, Illinois, before I transferred over to Carthage.
And what was your thinking about that? And then maybe you can tell me later if that's common to you. So.
Yeah, so when I was in high school, my sort of game plan was really just to go to a school that gave me the most amount of money, and that I would not advise, because that means that there's, that may mean future challenges and later on in terms of, like, paying for school and things like that if you're just going to a school that just gives you the most amount of money right off the bat, right? Mm-hmm. If there's not, like, things in place to sort of help you persist. And so I... then ended up left my former institution, then transferred to College of Lake County, where I completed my 2 years. And so for me, and those 2 years are really integral in terms of figuring out, you know, where can I go to make sure that I am interested in what I'm learning and that I'm also, you know, maximizing what I can gain in those 2 years before I finish my undergrad and have the opportunities lined up to do what I want to do in the future. And so I think sometimes in high school, there's a lot of pressure to just go to a four-year institution right off the bat or go to a prestigious institution and, you know, really like one that has a name, but not really thinking about, you know, can I excel here and are the resources there for me? And so some of that advice, I think, in my high school years and maybe for some students was missing. And it was really just about get the grades and it won't matter. You know, you'll get into wherever you want to go. And that's not always necessarily the case. You have to put in the work before scholarships, applications, and things like that, and being prepared. And that really sets you up for what you need to do in the future.
Right. So is that common, Carrie or Anna, that we have students who start out in a place like Gateway? We're sitting in Gateway right now. So do we have a lot of transfers that start out at Gateway and then show up at Carthage later?
Yeah, I would say we probably have more from College of Lake County for some reason. I think because College of Lake County has more of a traditional college age group coming in. So Gateway tends to have a few more older adults first. Yeah. So we see both, but I'd say probably more from CLC who come to Carthage and go full time. Mm-hmm. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. Yep. That sounds about right.
But it is pretty common for people to do that. And it's not in it. And most colleges are more than happy to welcome folks who transfer in from community colleges, so and certainly Carthage is, so that's a good way to go. If you're not sure, it's a good way to go, right?
Absolutely.
So let's finish by talking about maybe some stories that come out of this program. And I know it's only a couple of years old, but I think these are the kinds of things that listeners really enjoy hearing about. So if each of you could share a story about a first-generation student who really benefited from Club 1G or with just some extra support on their way to completion of their degree. So, Anna, can we start with you?
Oh, gosh. I have to think about one good – like, they all have great stories. I'm just so excited that they came to First in the Family and are now at Carthage. It's wonderful. I think one of my – favorite stories is just the student, and there's a couple of them, who I just see get really connected to campus. And I've had a couple conversations with a few of them that just say, like, I wouldn't have done this if I hadn't come to First in the Family, or if I hadn't had some of that information earlier on, I wouldn't have known that this was even an office that hired students or that I was eligible for work study. So just hearing some of the feedback that the information they gained through the program helped them, even in their first semester and then beyond. And to have, we have two lead mentors coming back for this iteration of the program who will be juniors, who have been so involved in the 2 years of First in the Family since their own, which was the the first year of it happening and just to see how excited they are to be a part of it. That just shows me that, if nothing else, the students are enjoying it and are finding that it helps them build that community across the participants. Because one of the biggest things of feedback that I hear over and over and over again, especially from the students that have come back as mentors, is that they met their best friends in the program. Mm-hmm. And the people that they're still friends with today. And I think that sense of belonging, that feeling connected to other people, is one of the biggest reasons that a student decides to stay. And so that's really rewarding to hear.
So I have a few, but I think I'll just sort of sum them up in one. I think the amazing thing about 1G and what we were able to sort of create with that was a place where everyone could sort of find common interests and work towards a common goal. And so really the point and the existence of 1G is to really create a sense of camaraderie around students on campus who are considered underrepresented, right? And so that organization became what it became because of the students who are involved, who really wanted it to be a place where other first-gen students or other like-minded students, other allies could come and create a place there. And so I have one student who's really interested in graphic design, right? And so she really dived into that part of our organization, helping us with our logo, our branding, and things like that. And so that she was able to sort of create that niche there with her interest, but also working in this larger sort of picture of what we're creating at Carthage, which is, you know, reaching out all across the campus for all students to sort of find their place there.
You know, I should have asked this specifically earlier, but besides the orientation activities, how often do you meet as a 1G group and what do you do?
We meet once a week, and so that depends on semester to semester depending on everyone's availability, but usually it tends to be like Tuesdays. And so we meet once a week, and what we do is we have sort of month by month a plan, a game plan of goals that we're trying to reach. And so this last semester, one was working with the Boys and Girls Club at Kenosha, and so we did two workshops there with the students on college readiness. So one was about picking a college and what you should be looking for. One was about tuition and sort of understanding those numbers. And we also played the same college lingo game that we played with First in the Family with these students. These were students who were from like seventh grade to pretty much seniors in high school is sort of the age group that we had. And so we played the same college lingo game with them. And it wasn't about, you know, getting it right so much as getting the exposure that maybe some place 2-3 years from now, if they're like a seventh grader, eighth grader, and they're getting ready to graduate, they're like, oh, I've heard the word registrar before, but I don't know where, but maybe I want to find out more about that. And so that was sort of the goal of doing that. So we sort of have, I guess, like in-house community projects that we do with the larger Carthage community, but also outside the community as well.
Okay. And then Carrie, can you tell us a story about someone that's in the 1G program?
Yeah, and actually the story comes from prior to these two, actually, individuals being in 1G. One was a student who volunteered for a focus group that I held maybe 3-4 years ago now. And I had never met the student before, and she came to share a little bit about her experience being first generation. And now, you know, after that, she felt more comfortable coming to me for some help. But then she was a part of getting 1G started with Maham, and she's graduated just recently. And actually, she's going into education, which is fantastic. But then the other student I'm thinking of is someone from, I'll just say, an intersectional type of place, I guess, with being first generation. So not only are they first generation, but they have some other identities that are challenging to move forward with in a higher education environment. And this is a student also who is still here despite several setbacks, and is on track to graduate on time. So I think seeing that sense of belonging, in addition to being able to succeed in the classroom, is huge.
Okay. Well, we are just about out of time. This is WGTD HDFM, and this is Education Matters. We've been talking about Carthage College's first-generation college student program, and my guests have been Maham Ali, 2019 Carthage graduate and founder of Club 1G program at Carthage, Anna Thompson, academic advisor at Carthage and coordinator of the first-generation program, and Carrie Espinosa, director of Carthage College's Center for Student Success. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you.
This program will be archived at WGTD.org on the Education Matters page. You are invited to listen again, or you can find our WGTD Education Matters Facebook page and join in a discussion there. Thank you.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard each Saturday morning at 10:30 on WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. Archived programs are available on our website, WGTD.org, and you're invited to continue the discussion on the Education Matters Facebook page.
Support for WGTD comes from Bragi Cafe, a locally owned business offering sustainable international wines and beer and live music and dinner on Friday and Saturday nights. Relax at Bragi, your ship has come in. 107 North Walworth Avenue in Williams Bay, now open for the season.
Support for WGTD comes from the University of Wisconsin-Parkside, offering a new online sports management master's degree. Learn business skills for today's fast-paced sports environment. Details at uwp.edu.
Support for WGTD comes from Bragi Cafe, a family-owned business offering in-house crafted smoothies and herbal elixirs. Be at home at Bragi, 107 North Walworth Avenue in Williams Bay,